I'm Jonathan Schwartz. I'm talking to biographer Richard Schickel and actor-director Clint Eastwood. Clint, have you ever seen Schickel's monumental D.W. Griffith book? Have you ever even looked at it?
Yes, I have.
It's just amazing that anyone could type up all of those pages.
I know.
I don't know if you know this or not, Clint, but there is in this world a Richard Schickel biography of Lena Horne.
Autobiography.
It's true. It's an autobiography.
It's my one as-told-to book.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't read that, and I'd like to
get you
read that,
a copy of that.
I was an admirer of Lena Horne, too. She sung in a very entertaining way.
And she was also an honest entertainer.
Uh-huh. Well, I have I'm a great admirer of hers.
One of the things I find about Clint, and it's different from him, it's a difference between Clint and other people in his line of work. And, not to be over complimentary to my subject, but he really does know movies. Mm-hmm. And it's a curiosity of life in Hollywood that lots of people who make movies don't know movies. They don't know them historically, and they don't have the frame of reference that Clint has. So a lot of our conversations when we weren't working on the book are, well, what have you seen lately? Well, what do you like and what do you not like?
Clint, do you have the knowledge that Richard suggests in the territory of European films as well as American films?
To some degree, I don't have the knowledge that he does, because he's a very fine film historian. But I do have just the knowledge that comes with a living, being brought up in the era of films, when films were the primary form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. There was no such thing as television. And that you went to a lot of films and you remember those films. They had influence on your life. And then later, now as an adult, looking back on that particular period, you start studying the people who made them. I think younger players and directors and producers sometimes don't have that advantage. They're brought up on television, and you have to watch. Sometimes television becomes talking heads. Mm-hmm. What have you, and they've missed some of the
spaciousness
of the John Fords and the Howard Hawks or Preston Sturges and Raoul Walsh and whoever.
Richard, I was thinking along the lines of Antonioni. Mm-hmm. I've always thought of Clint as an Antonioni character.
Really?
Well, he because his films are psychologically spacious.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read your book and learned of Clint's childhood, which was quite wandering and nomadic, mm-hmm. and very Western and very American, even though Antonioni is an Italian, his films, La Ventura and La Notte and The Eclipse, are psychologically as desert-like, particularly La Ventura, which gets on an island and stays there.
Right.
I've always thought that one of the, besides jazz, and I think one of the keys to Clint's character is his Californianness.
Absolutely.
Californianness, which is different from, say, a Westerner, in the kind of plain state sense of the word. I've wrestled with that in the book. I mean, I don't know, it's hard for me to understand quite what makes people who are born and raised in California different from the rest of us.
Well, let's ask him.
Why don't we do that? We can add a chapter to the book.
Clint, you've heard the question. What's the answer?
I have no idea what the answer is. I think Californianness might be an interesting observation as opposed to a Los Angelesness,
which is probably a
separate entity from California.
What's more,
I think
Northern
what Richard's
California.
Talking about the California as an expanse, as a very large state that goes quite a ways to the north and all the way to the Mexican border.
Yeah, it's something in the native borns, and something I picked up from Joan Didion, this notion of that land, and not only its spaciousness, but its variety. You know, there's mountains and deserts and seashores and all of that. There's almost a mystical connection between the native-born Californian and that landscape. And I think it leads to a certain cast of character. I think it leads to a certain independence. I think it leads to almost a certain kind of transcendentalism. I mean, Clint did say to me at one point that as religious experiences go, and he's not the only Californian ever to have said this, looking down into the valley at Yosemite is about as moving as it gets. And I think that there's something there in that that accounts for perhaps some of his taste in what he likes to do as an actor and a director and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm putting words in your mouth, but that's an observation.
Well, there is something to that. You have the Cascade mountain range to the north, which is the beginning of the, or at least the southern end of a volcanic range of mountains, Mount Lassen, which was prior to Mount St. Helens, the last active volcano in the United States. And then you go up through Mount Shasta and then back down into the Sierra Nevada range, which is rather vast and goes all the way to the Southern California. And you have the valleys, the Sacramento Valley to the north and the San Joaquin.
Joan Didion.
Mm-hmm.
All the agricultural.
And the desert.
It's all the land of Steinbeck and maybe Joan Didion has a grasp on that as well, as that you... There's a great variety, as Richard says. You got the seashores and the redwoods to the north.
And the deserts.
And the deserts.
The Coachella Valley.
Yeah.
And the Imperial Valley heading down towards Mexico.
Yeah.
Are, to me, just staggering.
And out into Death Valley, where it's the lowest and the dry, most arid part of probably the United States.
Clint, let's hear some Charlie Parker. What have you got?
What do we have? Lester Leaps In.
Tell us about that before we
This was a live performance. In fact, we used it in the movie Bird, made a few years ago. It was a very exciting performance that was... Chan Parker used to go around to different events and hang a microphone. And there was another fellow named Benedetti who used to do the same thing, and they have famous missing Benedetti tapes, which we actually found in our search for material on Charlie Parker. But she used to hang a microphone on the bandstand where he was going to play, and you'd get his tracks fairly good,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of times they would save the tape when everybody else was playing, and then turn it back on. So we had all these solos and these elements,
mm-hmm.
and we had to repair them.
What fun, actually!
And actually repair them by Lenny Niehaus would get a modern-day player to play in the same key and fill it in, and we get another drummer and bass, and in some cases the original bass player, in some cases not. We did have Ray Brown and people like that who had Ron Carter.
Of course, Ray Brown is the one person who married Ella Fitzgerald.
Right, and he played with Bird too, and
yeah,
he was very
of course,
young.
Yeah. And I saw him. In July, he's as vigorous and as youthful as can be.
Oh, he's tremendous. He's tremendous. He's one of the great bass players ever, and he's still playing at top form.
Mm-hmm. We'll break for a couple of messages and be back here at 1560 WQEW in New York.